He kept the porch light on every night after New Year's Day, 2021. Neighbors thought it was a habit. He said it helped him see the phone better when the messages came. A green bubble at 7:38 p.m., then another at 7:42 p.m., March 12, 2021, telling him he was doing great, that the market was moving, that he should add a little more. He believed it because she stayed up with him when he could not sleep. She asked about his sister's surgery and remembered his dog's name. The first wire was small. The next one was not. Across an ocean, in a room without windows, a young man watched the same chat on a second screen. He copied the last line and pasted a heart. He was paid to make strangers feel safe. He owed his handler, and there were cameras at the door. The wallet blinked. The balance rose. Somewhere in the chain, a cut would move again, the way it always did. Chapter 1, The Porch Light. He sat at the kitchen table at 7:20 p.m., January 4, 2024, with the porch light glowing through the glass. The phone buzzed. "Good evening, love. Did you eat?" He smiled and answered. He told her about the soup. She sent a photo of noodles that could have been anywhere. He did not know it was a stock picture. He met her in August 2021 on a networking app. She said she traded nights and worked days at a clinic. In the first week, she asked nothing big. She asked what scared him about money. He said retirement. She said she had a plan that was slow and calm. He liked the word slow and calm. The first deposit landed on a clean-looking site. Charts moved. When he messaged her at midnight, she replied in seconds. The balance rose after each suggestion. A small withdrawal worked. That was the test. He told himself it had to be real because he could touch the cash. He put in more. He slept less. Federal alerts went out that fall. Agents begged people to slow down. They described a pattern with bright colors and soft words that ended the same way. The pattern crossed states. It crossed to rooms where men and women worked under watch, sending lines to 100 phones at once. Workers learned birthdays and pets, and how to write good morning with warmth. The job was to keep a person from asking the wrong question at the wrong time. He kept his questions small. She told him to look, not think. He looked and saw the line go up. He looked again and saw a number that made him breathe light. She suggested a time window that fit his lunch break. They began to live in that window. He spoke less to others. He spoke more to her. Across town, a different woman told a friend she had found someone who understood her. She had been widowed 3 years. He told her they could build a second life together if she wanted. He wrote each morning and night. He said he was learning trading to be better for her. She sent him a small gift card to celebrate his practice wins. He asked her to try the same platform. They agreed to do it together, like a class. She felt 14 again and laughed at herself for it. Behind the scenes, the platform was not a platform. It was a skin. It copied exchange prices with a delay and showed safe green candles. It accepted money but did not place orders. It moved funds to wallets that never sat still. The path ran through names that matched nothing and companies that existed on paper in places where the mail ran to empty desks. Screens showed profit while the real path turned a corner and vanished. By November 2022, his sister asked why he missed family night. He said work. He did not tell her that he was chasing a target number. He promised himself he would stop when he doubled the account. The number doubled. The site offered a bonus if he added more and held for 30 days. She called it a loyalty event. He liked the sound of that. On a winter afternoon, he asked to withdraw enough to pay the roof contractor. A pop-up said his account needed to clear a tax. She told him not to worry and to pay it through the site for speed. He stared at the screen and felt a ripple under the calm. She sent a voice note. She said she would stay on the phone. He wired the money. The pop-up vanished. A new one replaced it. It said compliance review pending. He did not sleep that night. He read their chat from the beginning. The photos. The days she remembered his dog's name. The little jokes about the porch light that never went off. In the morning, he opened the app. The balance was grayed out. He messaged. No reply. At 9:40 a.m., he called his bank. The woman on the line asked simple questions. She moved with care. She said this sounded like a known pattern. She asked him to come in, to bring everything, to stop all wires now. He drove with the porch light still on. The first agent he met wore a shirt with no tie. The agent did not talk down to him. He laid out a printout of the chat. He sketched how funds jumped from one place to another. He circled one name that showed up in three different paths. The agent said this was not about a bad date or a few greedy kids. This was a machine. At a desk in a city he would never visit, someone marked his file as closed. The worker moved to the next name. Another handler counted the night's totals and sent them up. A cut went to servers. A cut went to guards. A cut moved to accounts that fed other accounts. The names shifted. Labels changed. A small fraction reached a node that analysts later flagged in a report about foreign actors and state needs. He told the agent he felt stupid. The agent said shame was part of the design. The agent said the people on the other side used shame to keep victims quiet. He slid across a sheet with steps. Call the bank. Freeze what can be frozen. File the report. Save every message. Expect the grief to come in waves. He went home and turned off the porch light for the first time in a year. The house looked different in the dark. He sat at the table and waited for his sister. He held the dog and breathed. The phone buzzed. Unknown number. He let it ring. Chapter 2, The Machine Behind the Messages. He did not see the chain. None of them did. From his kitchen table, the world seemed small enough to fit in the glow of a phone. But the trail that started with his wire transfer had already crossed 3 countries before midnight. It passed through a payment processor in Singapore, a shell firm in Cambodia, and a wallet that bounced between exchanges before splitting into thousands of micropayments. By the time the bank's fraud team hit trace, the line had gone cold. The agents at the Los Angeles field office called it Layer 6, the level of distance where identity dissolved. Everything passed that was a maze. They had seen fragments before, mirrored websites, cloned customer service portals, even fake investment recovery, firms that targeted victims again. But this one was bigger. The numbers didn't make sense. One federal analyst told a colleague, "It's too efficient for a freelance scam. Someone's orchestrating this. Digital smoke." In early 2022, complaints flooded the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. Victims were describing the same pattern. Someone met them on a dating app or social media platform, introduced them to a trading mentor, and guided them to a website that looked like a legitimate crypto exchange. They'd watch their money double, sometimes triple, until the day they tried to withdraw. Then came silence. Behind each case file, an analyst noticed repeating details. The same spelling quirks in messages, the same timestamps in replies, and even similar photos used under different names. These weren't random catfish. They were scripts. Digital forensics linked the servers to cloud infrastructure rented from Hong Kong and Singapore providers. When investigators subpoenaed the host, the billing records pointed to companies with owners listed in Myanmar, Malaysia, and Thailand, all with near-identical incorporation dates. Each lead dissolved in bureaucracy. Paper companies with real-looking stamps. Phone numbers that rang to empty rooms. Still, the money kept moving. By mid-2022, intelligence reports whispered a darker theory. Some of these operations were feeding state coffers. Cyber experts studying blockchain flows noticed large transfers landing in wallets previously flagged for North Korea, linked laundering activity, including ones connected to the Lazarus Group, a hacking collective under sanctions for prior crypto thefts. It was impossible to prove direct control, but the patterns were too aligned to ignore. When billions vanish into wallets that end up financing weapons programs, the picture sharpens itself. The prison compounds. In Southeast Asia, hundreds of miles away, the scam had a face, though not the one anyone expected. Satellite imagery later confirmed vast compounds along the Mekong River and on the outskirts of Sihanoukville, Cambodia. They looked like business parks. Inside, they were cyber slavery camps, guarded by armed men. Inside those walls, workers sat at rows of computers under fluorescent lights, each logged into dating apps and messaging platforms. They were trafficked labor. Young professionals lured by fake job ads promising customer service roles, then beaten and forced to run scams. A former captive, rescued during a Thai police raid in early 2023, described the operation. "We were told to build relationships," he said, "to make them fall in love. There was a schedule, when to compliment, when to share family photos. The goal was trust. After that, we sold the dream of investment." He said supervisors graded them by conversion rate. How many people sent money, how many followed instructions without hesitation. "They called it pig butchering," he said quietly. "We called it surviving." Federal wake-up call. By the summer of 2023, the FBI, Homeland Security Investigations, and Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control were running joint cases under code name Iron Mirror. They weren't just tracking money, they were chasing an evolving structure, a hydra of deception. The first breakthrough came from a tip. A U.S. woman in her 60s wired $400,000 to a crypto consultant who used a New York business address. Investigators found the address belonged to a virtual office, a rented mailbox. But the IP used to access her account resolved to a data center in Kuala Lumpur, leased by a company that also hosted one of the fake exchanges. When agents traced the blockchain trail from her payment, they saw it merge into a pool used for hundreds of other victims. That pool then split across several layers, each sending fragments to new wallets within minutes. The chain eventually ended in mixers, platforms that blend cryptocurrency to obscure origins. A name surfaced in the mix: Trident Global Solutions Limited, a Hong Kong registered payment facilitator already flagged by Interpol for possible laundering. When U.S. Treasury analysts deconstructed its holdings, they found outbound flows matching wallets used by North Korean IT contractors already under sanction. By the time the findings reached Washington, the picture was clear. This was not only a fraud ring, it was potentially funding a nation under global sanctions. The Broken Hearts Bureau. In Chicago, Special Agent Maria Lopez had been chasing romance scams for nearly a decade. She had seen everything from Nigerian 419 emails to fake military officers, but nothing prepared her for this scale. Her team called it the Broken Hearts Bureau. She kept a whiteboard filled with names, dates, and flowcharts. One red string connected victims in Utah, New York, and Texas, all corresponding with wallets that passed through the same Ethereum node. During one case debrief, she said, "They've industrialized loneliness." Her team built a victim timeline. The messages followed a formula: flattery and empathy for 7 days, financial confidence within 14, investment introduction before day 21. Each mentor promised insider knowledge of a volatile market. They used fake dashboards and live charts scraped from real exchanges. Once hooked, victims were moved to encrypted chat apps for security. The emotional manipulation was brutal and precise. When a victim hesitated, the scammer feigned hurt. "I thought we were in this together." When a victim expressed doubt, they invoked love. "I only wanted to build a future with you." Lopez read these transcripts nightly. Each one told the same story in different handwriting. The digital forensics. To understand the machine, agents partnered with blockchain analysts from Chainalysis and TRM Labs. Together, they reconstructed thousands of transactions, each just a few $100s, but collectively forming billions. They identified clusters of wallet addresses operating on Asian time zones. Some were active only between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. local time, corresponding with working hours in Cambodia and Laos. When agents examined the metadata from domain registrations, they found recycled phone numbers and email addresses that reappeared in other scam infrastructure. A single phone number from Malaysia was tied to over 700 fraudulent websites, each promising safe returns through crypto trading mentorship. The forensic trail grew clearer. While many operations were profit-driven, a subset used laundering tactics identical to those in state-backed cyber theft cases. Experts described the intersection of crime and geopolitics as a new kind of war without guns. A victim fights back. Among the victims was Angela, a nurse from Denver who lost $190,000 over 5 months. Unlike others, she refused to vanish quietly. She began posting her experience on social media, warning others about the same fake investment apps. Within weeks, dozens of strangers messaged her. They'd lost similar amounts, sometimes to the same names. Angela compiled their screenshots and forwarded them to federal investigators. Her case became a cornerstone of Iron Mirror. Analysts matched her screenshots to code used on the fake platform, revealing a digital signature linking more than 400 identical sites. Angela later testified before a Senate committee on cyber fraud in 2024. Her voice broke only once, when describing how the scammer had sent her a video message with a sunset and piano music, promising a life together. "It wasn't just money," she said. "It was belief." Lawmakers promised tougher oversight on crypto platforms, but the machine behind the scams kept shifting domains faster than regulation could catch up. Inside the wire rooms, a Cambodian journalist embedded with rescue teams described the wire rooms: hot, airless spaces lined with computers and bunk beds. Workers lived in isolation, phones confiscated, guards stationed at doors. They're prisoners, not masterminds, she wrote. Some were tricked into coming for jobs in marketing or IT. Once here, their passports were taken. They were trained to manipulate Westerners through scripts translated from Chinese and English playbooks. Each script had emotional arcs. Week 1, build trust. Week 2, share daily routines. Week 3, introduce trading platform. Supervisors patrolled the aisles with batons, checking screens. Failure to hit targets meant beatings or electric shocks. International NGOs estimated over 120,000 trafficked workers were forced into cyber scams across Southeast Asia by 2024. Some escaped, most vanished into the system. One survivor later testified anonymously. We called America the gold field. They said people there were lonely and rich. They said the phones were weapons. Global reactions. By late 2024, the U.S. Treasury imposed sanctions on specific crypto mixers and facilitators linked to the operations. Simultaneously, the Department of Justice unsealed indictments against several foreign nationals accused of laundering proceeds through shell companies. South Korean intelligence services quietly shared data on crypto flows linked to the Lazarus Group, while Interpol coordinated raids on compounds across Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar. Dozens of victims were rescued. Hundreds of perpetrators were detained, though many were victims themselves. Yet even with seizures totaling hundreds of millions in crypto, the estimated total theft from Americans alone surpassed $3 billion since 2021. A Treasury official told reporters, "We're not chasing scammers anymore. We're chasing infrastructure. That's what funds everything else." Behind closed doors, cybersecurity analysts began referring to these frauds as financial weapons, tools of asymmetric warfare that erode economies without firing a shot. The analyst's desk. At Quantico, a cyber analyst named Ethan Park watched the blockchain visualization scroll across his monitor. Each glowing line represented a wallet transaction. He zoomed out until it looked like a galaxy of light. Billions of dollars pulsed through virtual space, crossing borders, morphing identities. He leaned back and said to no one in particular, "Every broken heart here is a data point." Park's team managed to freeze a handful of wallets after cooperation with international exchanges. But even as they celebrated, new ones appeared, fresh addresses, fresh victims. It reminded him of a phrase from his training. You don't kill a network, you outgrow it. They were trying. New task forces formed, crypto crime units in California, Florida, and New York. Banks tightened anti-fraud messaging. Dating apps deployed warnings about fake investors. Still, the messages kept coming. The scripts evolved. The avatars changed faces. The machine adapted faster than the law. The unseen faces. In a dusty Phnom Penh warehouse, workers logged in for another shift. Some barely spoke English, others could mimic accents perfectly. Their job was to impersonate affection. A supervisor reminded them, "Americans like patience. Don't rush. Ask about their day." Screens flickered to life, showing dozens of chat windows. In one, an old man in Missouri typed, "Good morning, beautiful." The reply came instantly. At another station, a new recruit hesitated before sending a message. His handler tapped the desk. "Do it," he ordered. "They're not real people to you. They're marks." But the worker knew they were real. He had seen their family photos, heard their voices crack when they said goodnight. He wanted to stop, but he owed a debt. The guards would not let him leave until he paid it off. He typed the line anyway. "I miss you too." Echoes back home. In Los Angeles, Agent Lopez presented her findings to a packed briefing room. Maps lit the wall, red dots across the Pacific Rim, yellow ones across American states. "This isn't just fraud," she told the room. "It's a mirror. Every weakness we have, loneliness, greed, hope, they're using it against us." She showed screenshots of texts, pictures of fake dashboards, and transaction graphs. The silence in the room was heavy. After the presentation, she sat alone in her car, scrolling through old case notes. Some victims had lost everything, savings, homes, relationships. A few had taken their lives out of shame. She whispered to herself, "We can't stop them all, but we can stop one." Her phone buzzed. Another complaint. Another name. Another light on the board. Shifting shadows. Early 2025 brought a brief moment of optimism. Interpol announced coordinated raids in Laos and Cambodia that rescued over 1,000 workers and seized more than $150 million in crypto. media headlines declared crackdown on pig butchering empire. But within weeks, new domains appeared under fresh branding. Old servers went dark, new ones emerged in West Africa and Eastern Europe. A cybersecurity firm called it Hydra laundering. Cut off one head, two grow back. Analysts concluded that a core node of the operation had shifted deeper into the darknet, using privacy coins and decentralized exchanges that left little trace. Meanwhile, the emotional manipulation continued. Victims received voice notes in familiar tones, often using AI-generated deepfakes of previous partners. Technology had turned the con into something near unstoppable. A line in the code. Late one night, Agent Park's team decrypted a seized server image. Buried deep in a folder labeled training was a text file titled phrases_of_trust.txt. It contained thousands of lines in multiple languages, ready-made emotional hooks. Line 1 read, "Remember that I believe in you more than anyone." Line 2, "Trust is a journey. Let's walk it together." Line 3, "If love is real, we must invest in it." Park stared at the last line for a long time. Then he printed it and pinned it to the wall. "These are not hackers," he said. "They're playwrights of deceit." The realization stung. The scam wasn't just digital theft, it was emotional warfare, engineered word by word. Closing beat. By March 2025, the FBI had confirmed more than 90,000 U.S. victims linked to pig butchering scams since 2021. The combined losses were estimated at over $3.5 billion, likely an undercount. In congressional hearings, Treasury officials described the networks as persistent and transnational, often intersecting with sanctioned state actors. But on the ground, it still came down to people. The man with the porch light, the nurse in Denver, and countless others who trusted a stranger through a screen. They weren't foolish. They were human. The agents closed another case file and prepared the next warrant. Across the world, the rooms buzzed again. The machine was still alive. Chapter 3, The Long Chase. The sun was barely up when the task force gathered in a gray, windowless conference room at Quantico. On the screen was a single word, Havenline. It was the name of a new exchange suspected to be a front for the same North Korea-linked fraud network. Every agent in the room knew what it meant. New brand, same machine. Agent Maria Lopez sat in the back with a cup of burnt coffee. The projector hummed while Ethan Park, the cyber analyst, walked them through the latest chain of transactions. Wallets spidered across the map like veins. Each node blinked, showing how the scam had survived every takedown. "They moved infrastructure again," Park said quietly. "Now they're running through privacy coins, Monero mostly. That means it's invisible." Someone at the table cursed under their breath. The operation had been running for years, but every time the team thought they'd found the last wallet, another branch opened. It wasn't just a fraud case anymore. It was an ongoing act of economic warfare. 1. The trail of numbers. The story of Havenline began in February 2025, when victims started reporting a new kind of romance investment hybrid app. It looked cleaner, more professional, with verification screens and even customer service chatbots. Some victims claimed they spoke to compliance officers before sending their money. In reality, those officers were scripts powered by artificial intelligence. Every reassurance, every polite reply, coded to disarm. Investigators recovered fragments of the backend. The developers had left behind snippets of Korean language variable names. When translated, one folder was labeled Training Farm 02. Another simply read, Red Star Exchange. That phrase drew attention in Washington. Red Star was also the name of North Korea's internal operating system, a subtle but chilling echo. Still, attribution was tricky. North Korea never left fingerprints. It worked through intermediaries, contractors, money mules, cryptocurrency brokers in other countries. The real mastermind stayed behind the digital curtain. 2. The sting. By April 2025, the task force decided to act. They built a fake victim profile named Evelyn Brooks, a widowed schoolteacher with a modest pension. Using her alias, agents registered on a known dating platform where earlier victims had been recruited. It took only 3 days for a message to arrive. "Hello, I noticed you like cooking. My mother taught me to." The sender called himself Daniel Hahn. His profile photo was a soft-faced man in his 30s with wire-rimmed glasses and a background of cherry blossoms. He was perfect, polite, attentive, consistent. Within 2 weeks, Daniel was talking about a trading app my cousin uses. He guided Evelyn through downloading Havenline. When she deposited $500, the account doubled overnight. The bait worked. Agents monitored every click through mirrored servers. They watched as her $500 moved into a digital wallet, then split in under 10 minutes into 12 separate transfers. From there, it bounced through Asia and into a new cold wallet traced to an exchange already under investigation for laundering funds from a previous case, Trident Global Solutions LTD. Lopez leaned forward. "We got them in motion," she said. Now came the hard part, catching them in real time. 3. The raid. Interpol had been planning a coordinated action for months. With data from US, South Korean, and Singaporean authorities, they mapped out potential wire farms in Laos and Cambodia. In May 2025, under the cover of night, joint forces moved on two compounds near Vientiane. The buildings were 4 stories tall, surrounded by barbed wire. Inside were hundreds of computers and dozens of exhausted workers. When the first agents stormed in, the workers didn't resist. They raised their hands, crying in multiple languages. Some wore fake customer service uniforms. Others had bruises on their wrists from restraints. They weren't the fraudsters. They were the enslaved labor that made the system work. One officer later said, "It was like walking into a call center from hell." The local authorities found ledgers, paper logs tracking daily revenue. One page listed Team 14, USA region, with quotas beside names. A side note read, "Average conversion rate 38%. Increase emotional tempo." At the back of the room, they found a wall of motivational slogans printed in Chinese. "Trust builds loyalty. Love is investment. Emotion is the key to profit." Servers were seized, and drives were flown to Singapore for analysis. Yet even as they celebrated the rescue of the trafficked workers, the agents knew the brains of the operation were still untouched. 4. The digital breakthrough. Weeks later, Park discovered something buried in one of the seized hard drives, a file named ledger_v2.db. It was encrypted, but within it were fragments of blockchain private keys. When cross-referenced with existing databases, the keys matched wallets that had received over $200 million in illicit funds. Most of those wallets had since gone dark, but a handful were still active. And one of them was connected to a state-owned bank in Pyongyang, routed through intermediaries in China. It wasn't proof in the courtroom sense, but in the world of intelligence, it was close enough to a smoking gun. When Park presented it to the interagency group, silence filled the room. "Are we saying what I think we're saying?" asked one Treasury analyst. "Yes," Park said. "They're moving romance scam money to fund missile parts." The realization hit hard. Billions siphoned from lonely Americans, funneling into programs meant to threaten global security. It wasn't just heartbreak anymore. It was geopolitics. 5. The media storm. By summer, word leaked to major outlets. Headlines read, "North Korea's digital love trap. Billions laundered through romance." Victims began to realize their heartbreak had global echoes. Angela, the nurse from Denver, was interviewed on live television. She spoke calmly, her eyes steady. "They stole my savings," she said. "But hearing where it might have gone, that's worse. My love became a weapon." The interviews spurred public outrage. Lawmakers demanded action, pushing for sanctions on any entity tied to the fraud chain. The Treasury Department responded swiftly, blacklisting 2 crypto exchanges and freezing $60 million in assets. But privately, officials admitted they'd only scratched the surface. One congressional aide said off record, "We're trying to plug a dam with our fingers." 6. Collateral damage. Meanwhile, back in Los Angeles, Lopez's team processed a new wave of victim reports. The stories blended into one long grief. Teachers, retirees, engineers, even a pastor. Some had lost life savings. Others, trust itself. Lopez started keeping a photo wall, not of suspects, but of victims who had chosen to speak publicly. She called it her wall of courage. One day, she received a small envelope with no return address. Inside was a photograph of an older man sitting on a porch beside his dog. On the back were 4 words, "Porch lights still off." She didn't know who sent it. Maybe it was him, the first victim. Maybe it was his sister. Either way, it was proof that someone had survived the machine. 7. The political layer. Behind closed doors, Washington debated how far to go. Directly accusing North Korea risked escalation. But the evidence was too strong to ignore. By August 2025, the US and South Korea jointly announced a new sanctions package targeting cybercrime-linked revenue streams, including crypto laundering rings believed to support the regime. A statement from the Treasury read, "These networks exploit global finance and human emotion to circumvent sanctions. The United States will continue to disrupt them wherever they operate." Diplomats chose their words carefully. The phrase "believed to support" gave deniability. But analysts in every allied capital knew the truth. This was an economic battlefield. 8. One step ahead. Even as sanctions rolled out, the scammers adapted again. Havenline vanished overnight, replaced by a new site, NovaInvest. Park's algorithms flagged it within hours. It used the same interface, same code fragments, even the same AI chatbot voice. He stared at the screen, exhausted. "They're already two steps ahead," he murmured. Lopez joined him, reading the chat transcripts from NovaInvest's newest victims. The lines were identical to those in the old files. "I think of you before I sleep. If we believe in love, we can believe in wealth." She shut the laptop. "How do you fight something that never sleeps?" Park looked up. "You don't fight it. You outlast it." 9. The man in the mirror. Half a world away, a trafficked worker named Jean sat in another compound, this one in Myanmar. He'd been there since 2022. He once dreamed of becoming a programmer. Instead, he wrote love scripts for strangers. One night, a new recruit sat beside him, trembling. "Do you ever think about them?" the recruit asked. "The people we message?" Jean hesitated. "Every day," he said. "That's why I try to warn them." He showed the recruit how sometimes he'd insert small typos or delay replies, tiny acts of sabotage that might make victims suspicious. It was his quiet rebellion. When the guards weren't looking, Jean added a hidden message in one of the scripts. "If you see this, you're not talking to who you think you are. Stop sending money." He knew he might be beaten if caught, but he did it anyway. It was the only freedom left. Months later, that message reached a woman in Kansas. She reported it to authorities, triggering an alert that helped trace one of the compound servers. Jean never knew what his warning achieved, but somewhere, an agent added his script to the case file with one word scribbled on the margin. Hero. 10. The reckoning. In September 2025, the Justice Department held a press briefing. The Attorney General stood before a sea of cameras. "Today," he said, "we unseal indictments against 12 foreign nationals involved in transnational fraud and money laundering connected to state-affiliated networks." Behind him, the flags of multiple agencies lined the stage. It was a rare show of unity, justice, Treasury, Homeland Security, and the FBI together. The indictments named brokers, intermediaries, and shell executives scattered across Asia. Few would ever be extradited. But symbolically, it marked a shift. The U.S. was treating emotional cyber fraud as a matter of national security. For the victims, it was vindication. For the perpetrators, it was a warning. 11. The aftermath. The numbers kept climbing. By late 2025, confirmed U.S. losses from pig butchering and related crypto scams exceeded $4 billion. Worldwide, experts believe the total surpassed $12 billion. New awareness campaigns flooded airwaves. Banks deployed fraud prevention banners. "If it feels too personal to be business, stop and verify." Dating apps integrated scam detection AIs that scanned for financial keywords. Some users even joked that love now comes with a CAPTCHA. But beneath the headlines, the scars ran deep. Families fractured. Retirements vanished. And trust itself, had become collateral damage. 12. The quiet endings. One autumn evening, Lopez visited a support group for victims of online scams. The room was filled with quiet conversation and coffee cups. Some cried. Others laughed at their own disbelief. A woman stood up and said, "They took my money, but not my kindness. I still believe people can be good." Lopez felt a lump rise in her throat. For the first time in months, she allowed herself to breathe. Outside, night had settled over the city. The glow of smartphones filled the sidewalks, each one a portal, each one a risk. She whispered, "Stay safe," to no one in particular, then drove home in silence. 13. The coda. In a dark room somewhere in East Asia, a handler scrolled through spreadsheets of earnings. His screen glowed with profit figures. He didn't care about the faces behind the numbers. To him, it was just arithmetic. But outside that same city, international agents had already pinpointed the server cluster. Within weeks, warrants would follow, raids would commence, and some semblance of justice would return. Yet everyone knew it was temporary. For every compound raided, two more would rise elsewhere. The world had become too interconnected, too digital, too easy to exploit. Still, for those who fought back, for the victims who spoke, for the workers who risked their lives to send hidden warnings, for the agents who stayed up nights tracing invisible trails, there was one truth left. The war was invisible, but the people were real. 14. Closing scene. Months later, in a modest house in California, the man who once left his porch light on sat with his sister on the front steps. The sky was quiet. The bulb above them glowed faintly. "I think I'll leave it off tonight," he said. His sister nodded. "You finally forgive yourself?" He took a slow breath. "Not yet, but I'm getting there." He looked out at the dark street, where no one texted him goodnight anymore, and no voice called him love. But in the silence, there was peace, the kind that comes after surviving something vast and cruel. Across the ocean, on a seized computer waiting in an evidence locker, the final chat message from his scammer sat frozen in time. "Sleep well, my dear." The words hung there like a ghost of the machine that wrote them, proof of how far deceit could travel, and how much light it took to finally see it.